Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The Dow tumbled more than 500 points after two pillars of the street tumbled over the weekend. Lehman Brothers, a 158-year-old firm, filed for bankruptcy.
Here's one of their frequent scorers, Serna. Through to Modric, who's very nimble. It's a glorious opening, and would you believe it?
Another financial titan has fallen. This time it's the ailing British mortgage giant HBOS, which owns Halifax Bank and the Bank of Scotland. Lloyds Bank agreed to take over HBOS, but that has put 40,000 jobs on the line.
It's Dario Serna. Oh, brilliant save! Rushdie as good as ever.
Brought down by bad mortgage investments, Lehman, which has 25,000 employees, will be liquidated.
I don't think anyone really expected a bank as big as Lehman to be in a position that it's in now.
And we are going to have extra time here in Vienna. Croatia have missed a stack of chances.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Greatest Games podcast on Football Ramble Daily in association with the Blizzard. My name is Marcus Speller. Opposite me, of course, is Jonathan Wilson. And in the studio with us today is Tarek Panja, reporter for the New York Times and co-author of Football's Secret Trade, How the Player Transfer Market Was Infiltrated. Tarek, a pleasure to have you with us.
Really good to be with you guys.
Now, today we go back to Euro 2008, the quarterfinal between Turkey and Croatia. It ended 3-1 to Turkey on penalties after the match finished 1-1. Tarek, why have you chosen this game?
Well, I've covered a lot of games over the years professionally, and that particular game will live long in the memory, perhaps not for the football. We'll get into it. It ended very dramatically, but more from a professional perspective. My laptop was bouncing off the table for 120 minutes and more. That's never happened before or since that moment. The atmosphere in that stadium with the Croatian fans and the Turkish fans, something that I've not experienced before. I've been to some pretty tasty games in Brazil and all around the world. But that game, I wasn't expecting it as well, because I'd not seen much of Croatia or Turkey before. Mm. And I will always remember that match for more for the atmosphere than anything else, and then the dramatic finish.
And both sides didn't have that much pedigree. Well, obviously Croatia had reached the semi-final of the World Cup in 1998, but they hadn't had that much longevity in tournaments previously.
Yeah, and
so one can feel, oh, maybe they won't turn up in number.
Yeah,
it was like,
yeah, and it also felt like the other quarter final with these two teams that weren't fancied, and also in that tournament up until that game, Turkey were terrible. I think.
Well, they were the comeback kings, weren't they?
Absolutely. I think they'd only led for 6 minutes.
That's right. Yeah.
Throughout that tournament, and I suppose it kind of talks about the passion of the team, in the sense we're talking about the passion of the fans as well. They just kept going,
yeah,
and didn't know when they were beaten.
Well, yeah, I mean, their group stage, they lost their opening game 2-0 to Portugal. Then they beat Switzerland with a 92nd-minute winner from Arda Turan. And then they came from 2-0 down, a quarter of an hour to go, to beat the Czech Republic 3-2, thanks to two of the worst errors you'll ever see from Petr Cech. So, you know, their presence there was astonishing. Whereas Croatia, you know, I think we'd seen them in qualifying with England. They're obviously a decent side. But they've been really, really good in the group stage. You know, 3 wins out of 3, beaten Germany.
Yeah.
Beaten Austria and Poland as well.
And it was a decent Germany side. It was rejuvenated after the 2006 World Cup.
And, you know, the beginning of Yogi Löw's...
Yogi Löw.
But yeah, I mean, what you're saying about it being the other quarterfinal, I went to the other three. I didn't go this one. I mean, that was mainly... It's a strange setup. They had the quarterfinals on 4 separate days, which I don't think they've
not done that
since.
Yeah.
And so games 1 and 3 were in Basel. Games 2 and 4 were in Vienna.
This one was in Vienna.
And this was that second one. So I went to the 2 Basel ones and the second one in Vienna. It wasn't that I was deliberately snubbing this game, but... you're right. This was the game of Croatia, plucky outsiders, Turkey. What on earth are they doing there?
It was a case of that. And also these really young Croatians who have grown to become some of the most sort of sought after, most popular players in recent time. We're talking about, you know, Rakitic, yeah, Modric, etc.
Very young player. Modric still was playing in Croatia, wasn't he, at the time?
Yeah, just transferred to Spurs after that tournament, I think.
Yeah, right. I think the deal had either been done or was very close to being done.
Curious deal.
It's almost like Stravko Mamic isn't necessarily doing it for footballing reasons.
Yeah, I just remind you that co-author of Football's Secret Trade, How the Player Transfer Market Was Infiltrated.
For another podcast, perhaps.
But Rakitic was Schalke. He was playing in Germany. Yeah. At the time. But it is interesting looking at some of those names. You mentioned Arda Turan as well, who these players went on to win sort of big league titles and play for some of Europe's elite, most notably in Spain, of course.
And Turkey in that game also had to recall Rustu.
They did.
Rustu Reshpa, yeah, because
the other keeper was suspended.
Demiral had got himself sent off.
That's right.
You've just come from 2-0 down a quarter of an hour to go to beat the Czech Republic. And I think I'm right in saying that had that game been a draw, they would have finished with an absolutely identical record to the Czech Republic and would have gone out on the grounds they had a worse coefficient.
Is that right?
I couldn't find confirmation of that, but reading the rules of the tournament and looking at the group, that's what I think was the case. Now, I was at that game, which was in Geneva, and I don't really remember... I remember writing a piece of the Czechs go through, they look really strong, and then I'm, oh, God, got to redo this. And, yeah, Petr Cech just falling apart.
That's right, I remember that, yeah.
So... I can't remember what point I was making, but yeah, incredibly fortunate to be there.
They were quite.
Oh yeah, sorry. So they this great comeback. They got this goal to go through.
Yeah,
and then a red card for like a ridiculous sort of mini assault in injury time.
So pointless, and it put them, you know, in a sort of a slight disadvantage going into the Croatia game, because they were missing one or two players. I mean, Emery, the captain, I think, was out for the game as well.
Yeah, I think they managed to get Colin Kazim Richards into the...
He was there.
Yeah, he was playing up front with Niha Kovacic.
That's right.
Tuncay Sanli playing just behind them as the playmaker. Mm.
But when you're saying that, you know, why on earth were Turkey there? I mean, not that... It would have been 6 years previously they reached a World Cup semi-final themselves.
Yeah, so what I mean by that is just if you'd watched their three group games, when they'd been behind for... hang on, let's work this out. 264. Oh, they hadn't been behind for that, but they hadn't been in the lead for 264 over 270 minutes. It was a little bit of a, how on earth has that happened?
Mm. Well, they had this reputation, which of course would be fueled even more.
And I think actually in the long term, it was, I don't know, maybe the people I know in Turkey I realise that there are streams in Turkish football which lie quite a long way below the surface. It may just be the people I know in Turkish football are preconditioned not to like Fatih Terim. But I think it's sort of persuaded people that Fatih Terim's style of management, his sense, it's all about character, it's all about leadership, it's all about guts. It sort of reified in people's minds the idea that that was true, which is a process German football had gone through in the 90s, mm-hmm. and having to sort of accept that tactical things have happened that have changed, mm-hmm. Which is odd because, you know, it was under Samuel Gunesh in 2002 when they got to the semi-finals, and Gunesh has since come back and has made them a much more modern, pressing side. Mm. But I think there's definitely some sections of Turkish football think with Fatih Terim, great coach though he was, great motivator, great leader that he was, he actually held Turkey back, and in a sense getting to the semi-final here wasn't necessarily the best thing for the long-term development of Turkish football. Then again, it's a semi-final of a major tournament. Yeah. There's not many countries that are in a position to be picky about that.
What would you say national team football kind of... obviously, the tactical stuff is extremely important, but the fact that the players aren't with the coaching staff as long as a club team, do you think that kind of sort of visceral, nationalistic, come on, let's go and win this match, do you think some of that has a bigger impact in national team football versus a sort of a club season or a European?
Yeah, definitely. And also, I mean, for precisely the reasons you lay out, yes, that it's not as tactically sophisticated, but also it is a country. So with the best will in the world, if you've moved to Manchester United for €100 million from Juventus, to take an obvious example, £80 million, whatever it was. I mean, maybe that's a bad example because Pogba obviously kind of came through United's youth ranks.
But we take the point.
If you're like, you know, essentially a mercenary who's been signed by a club, however much you enjoy the club and however much you sort of professionally do your duty and however much you sort of you want to do well for your teammates, it's not the same as... You know, Croatia in 96, which I think is probably the most patriotically driven team I sort of can remember watching. You know, the way they belted out a national anthem 2 years after a war that's certainly in your eyes has gained your country independence, and where sort of wearing that, the Sakas Nietzsche, the checkerboard, which has been banned for years under Tito. That must be a feeling of extraordinary pride in the sense, you know, the chant of Croatia fans, oh boy, Zanara da Zavoy, you know, to battle for your nation. Mm. You know, it is a sort of war by other means.
That stuff matters in these.
And it's easy to say all football should be 100% motivated all the time, but we all know from everything in our lives, there's days when your days when you go to the gym and you feel it a bit more than other days. Yeah. Mm. Days when you play football on a Saturday, sure. When you're prepared to take the wax, and days when you're not.
Mm. But I mean, to use a much softer example, you know, Southgate said 2018, you know, he tried to instill it in the players, in the England players, this will be bigger than anything you do with your clubs. You know, trying to kind of get that idea of, in a more kind of English way, that sort of nationhood. I mean, at the time of recording, we're not sure when this podcast will be going out, but in the Six Nations, you know, Eddie Jones, the Aussie England manager, was saying that to try and instill that identity, that national identity in the England rugby team has been very difficult. Whereas Ireland, you know, they've got Bono coming in telling them what it is to be Irish and all this kind of stuff and so on and so forth. But these two sides, as you've mapped out very well there about Croatia and Turkey, very nationalistic nations.
You, that's what you felt. Walking into that stadium, just that was the sense of occasion. It wasn't, it was the quarter final of a European championship.
In a smaller tournament, then there was no second round.
There was no second round, but to be honest, it was a harder tournament, I would say. Harder to get into the tournament itself, and harder to get into the knockout, because as Turkey found, those group stage games are quite difficult.
Sometimes you need a helping hand, which they of course got from Czech.
But you know, they're there, and you get also the size of the fan bases was enormous.
There's a lot of Turkish immigration to Switzerland.
And it's close to Germany, that part.
The game they play against Portugal, there's a lot of Portuguese immigration to Switzerland, so I didn't realise until...
Well, in Croatia as well.
Was that in Geneva as well? I can't remember. I remember kind of walking from the station, whichever city that was, to the ground for that Portugal-Turkey game. And it felt like every building had a flag of one or other nation.
Well, of course, a lot of Turkish immigrants in Germany, and it's not that far.
You felt that. This was a European game, and I was looking at, funny enough, the UEFA ticket sales for this tournament coming up, Euro 2020, and they do the breakdown for where the ticket buyers are for each game, and it tends to be the fans or the public. I wouldn't necessarily call them fans of either team, but the neutral fans from the host city, etc., are the majority. But if you were in that arena that day, it was very hard to find a neutral. I mean,
I don't quite know to what extent this sort of resonates among modern fans, but there is the historical aspect of, you know, the Ottoman Empire had controlled a lot of what became Yugoslavia, and then Croatia had been part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, whose centre obviously was in Vienna. So Vienna is sort of the perfect stage for this clash of, the historical clash of East and West, for want of better terms, is these two nations have been rubbing up against each other in various forms, and then play it in the Austro-Hungarian capital. Mm-hmm. It does have this historical resonance,
and also with Fatih Terim and Slaven Bilic in charge.
Yes, two very patriotic, yeah, and
it really does
very proud men.
Add to the whole thing.
And you could have had a camera on just those two for that game, and I don't think you would have lost a viewer.
Yeah.
just watching them was exhausting.
Yeah, I'm sure.
We'll get on to what Bilic did a bit later on.
Indeed, we will. So, I mean, I don't think anybody. If you look at some of the other sides in the quarterfinals, people weren't talking about maybe these sides perhaps winning it, but Croatia were firm.
Well, I think Croatia, after the group stage, I think people had sort of realised Croatia were a properly decent side. I mean, they'd outplayed Germany. They fully deserved to win that.
Mm-hmm.
The fact they'd put England out in qualifying.
Mm-hmm. But some of those players that we talked about that have gone on and are still playing.
Yeah.
They was younger, they didn't have the names that they do now. Because you can think they do looking back on it because you recognise them, but at the time they were slightly under the radar.
Well, maybe, but I mean, and again, maybe I'm in a slightly false position here because I'd just written Behind the Curtain. I'd spent quite a bit of time with Bilic. I'd watched this team quite a lot. And I'd watched his under-21s quite a lot. Yeah, people like Harry Redknapp's Niko Kranjčar. Modric obviously was the star of the team. The Kovac brothers were really good players.
Dario Cerna.
Dario Cerna, who's playing on the right wing in this game, before he went back. Well, because he was a fantastic cross to the ball, which people forget.
But I always think of him as a defender, yeah.
Well, there was a chap who had the kidney transplant as well, right? Petric.
He came off the bench.
Yeah.
Later played for Fulham.
Yeah, they had a lot. There was a lot of stories.
And he now is the main sort of co-commentator on German TV on the Premier League, weirdly.
Well, there you are.
Well, a couple of seasons at Fulham would do that.
Well, he's Hamburg side were beaten there in the semi-final of the Europa, you see. Turn up to the fortress, and all the rest of it. All right, gentlemen, well, let's have a quick break and then we'll talk about the game itself.
Modric is over there. The keeper's out. The cross is forthcoming. Klasnić! And it's him again. It's Ivan Klasnić who sends Croatia surely into the semi-finals of the European Championships.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
He just says, how many holes does a straw have? 0, 1, or 2? The internet can't figure it out, so I've done what any sane person would do. Ask the Luke and the Pete.
Join me, Pete Donaldson, and Luke Moore for an unplanned half hour every Monday and Thursday as we talk about, well, anything really, from your emails to life's great mysteries to this guy.
The noise you're going to hear sounds like a man being interrupted by a car. He isn't being interrupted by the car. He is making the car sound.
How on earth is he doing that? Beep, 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 beep. How does he make that noise? Listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Beep, 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 beep.
The Luke and Pete Show is a Stakhanov production.
Who's going to smack it up into the other half? Croatia still wanting to make a substitution. The referee won't let them make it. Here's an equaliser! All the drama has come in the last 60 seconds of extra time. The equaliser struck by Semi Šentek. I cannot believe this.
Welcome back to Greatest Games on Football Ramble Daily in association with the Blizzard. Now then, so to the quarterfinal itself. So yes, under Fatih Terim, Turkey, and under Slaven Bilic, Croatia, of course, they face off. But you said there in the first half that you spent a bit of time with Bilic and so on. What did you make of him? Because this season, again, at the time of recording, his West Brom side are doing pretty well. But as a manager, I'm guessing that people would think, you know, probably has his limitations, and he's a bit about motivating and blood, guts, and thunder.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's slightly unfair. And I think his reputation in England has sort of gone that way because of the way things sort of fell apart in that final season at West Ham. Mm-hmm. And I know he has had failures in his career. I mean, he didn't have a great time when he went to Russia. But I think he's incredibly good company, which doesn't necessarily make you a good manager, but it makes me better disposed towards you. That team was beautifully balanced. You had Rakitic on the left, who naturally cut inside, and then a very attacking left back in Daniel Pranić, who maybe not the greatest technician, but great engine. So, you know, he could get down the outside, which then creates space for Rakitic to come inside. Olic, the hardest working centre forward in the world. Crenshaw, which sort of balances out Crenshaw, who is sort of a languid number 10. Sienna, a great crosser of the ball. Niko Kovac, a naturally sort of defensive midfielder with, again, an incredible engine, which allows you to play Modric in a slightly freer, more number 10 role. Mm-hmm. So
it was nice to see Vedran Čorluka's name as well.
Yeah, but and again, sort of a solid figure who allows Sienna to push on and get the crosses in. Sienna's not having to do much tracking back because he knows that Čorluka's there. And it also means that back four, the three of them who aren't Pranić can shuffle across to cover when Pranić goes forward. So the balance of it, I think, is really nice. Now, it might be Bilic is lucky to inherit that, but I think
you've got to give him
some credit for the way he put it together.
We also take for granted, I think, now, because it's just, we see it, every team, you know, down the leagues, that your fullbacks are going to be bombing on and part of the attacking phase. But I think that tournament with Cerna, with Croatia, and it was Rats with Romania, and we're talking to you about it during the tournament, actually, it wasn't as... Of course, that's what fullbacks do.
And Philipp Lahm was just coming through with Germany as well. Yeah, I remember. I remember the piece.
For me, it was eye catching, and you know, it's such an added dimension if you have those players when you have, you know, traditionally conservative fullbacks, etc. You know, you almost have extra players on the field, and those teams, in particular in that tournament, I remember Rats of Romania and Cerna with Croatia.
Well, no, Pranić, because Cerna was playing midfield, so Pranić was a Croatian. He was getting
behind, yeah. You know, that tactic, you know, we see with Alexander Arnold, everybody at Robertson, it's like, oh, it's just happened this season or something. Yeah. I mean,
when then Rats and Cerna end up playing together as very attacking fullbacks at Shakhtar.
That's right, yes, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that for me, and also was very kind of positive, wasn't it? The way the Croatia approached the game, it wasn't stodgy.
Yes, yeah. I mean, they were great fun to watch, and you know, one of the things I think we saw in this tournament. I mean, it was the tournament when 4-3-1, you know, totally replaced 4-4-2 as being the default formation. I think Yogi Löw might even change during the tournament. They beat Portugal 3-2 in the quarterfinal. I think that was the sort of a key game that, although Germany sort of ended up winning that game, they sort of realised the balance that a 4-3-1 gives you in terms of allowing dribblers into the side. And I think to an extent they got away with it because of Schweinsteiger and his incredible ability to get up and down. And I think one of the reasons we've seen the traditional three bands of 4-4-2 moving to more and more to four bands of 4-3-1 is just that they have the energy to play as a box-to-box player. There's a tiny number of footballers who are capable of doing that now. And actually those who can often look slightly out of place, but people don't quite know where to put them. And Pogba, I think, is a good example of that. Jordan Henderson, to an extent, is a slightly different example of that.
Wanda Sari, Kante, was perhaps...
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Kante had never really had the creative or technical quality to play further forward. But yeah, I mean, he's an example of a holding player who is able to play that box-to-box role as well because of his engine.
But you would have thought you'd keep him in the position where he is world-class, though.
It's certainly what I'd have done, but anyway. So it was significant from that point of view, but there's also, I think, Modric's role in this tournament and in what that meant for football going forward was really striking. I remember writing a piece about this as well. Modric's ability to take the ball in a half turn. And so you look at him and he's, you know, Barney Rono's great phrase, he looks like a little boy dressed as a witch. He just looks like he should be bullied. Mm. You know, he looks like a footballer who will not hack it at the highest level because he's not strong enough. And yet his touch and his movement was good enough that he got away from defenders. But I think what we also saw was partly down to law changes, crackdown on intimidatory tackling, but also changing the offside law, which meant teams were much less inclined to play a permanent high offside line. So rather than teams effectively playing 10 yards either side of halfway and the game being compressed in that sort of 20, 25 yard space, they had to sit deeper because you could go behind that line and you might not be called offside. You might be deemed not to be interfering. So teams naturally sat deeper. That increases the length of the playing area to 45, 50, 60 yards. Mm. Suddenly there's space for little players. What happens the following season? Barcelona with a load of little players play the best football we've ever seen.
Yeah. And the rest is history. But Turkey, how did you feel about the Turkish side, Tarek? I mean, we mentioned Rustu was brought in, the 35-year-old veteran.
Just through sheer will. You know, we've gone through all this sort of...
I was going to say, rather different to Croatia.
With Croatia, I mean, to me, it was... Again, this team that is one with its flag, with its country, and it came into this tournament and it didn't give up. You know, if you were going to name a team of the tournament, it'd be very hard to find a Turkish player. And I, it's obviously disrespectful to the players, maybe, but maximum respect to the country and to the team for creating that collective that managed to sort of go to the semi-finals. And let's not forget that. They almost did it again.
I know, yeah, that's right.
Against Germany, they got battered, and it was raining. And
Because I was watching that in a bar in Vienna, and the weather was so bad that the transmission went down.
That's right.
So we were sitting in this bar with all these German fans fuming at this kind of blank TV because it was incredible storms and
half of Austria and part of Switzerland lost its television signal that night.
It's not what you want.
So it wasn't I mean, great.
The one player who can't even blame
ITV for that, can you?
The one player who might have got into a team of a tournament from Turkey is Arda Turan. I think you could see because they sort of played a diamond. He was on the left side of the diamond, but got forward, and you could see his quality and you see his class. But then, getting in ahead of those Spain players in midfield.
It'd be very tricky. But in the game, I mean, the game starts and Croatia are on the front foot. And they, I mean, really from start to finish with the better side.
Well, that chance after 20 minutes when Modric gets down the right, puts in a low cross, Olic, 6 yards out.
He couldn't do it again. He'd score like 99 times out of 100. That ball goes. Yeah. It's harder to hit the bar.
And then Cranshaw, a bit sort of surprised, his ball's bounced back at him, just sort of nods it slightly tamely over. Uh-huh. When he actually had a load of time, he could have sort of taken it down or, you know.
It wasn't a good game, though. It wasn't. Croatia were objectively, like watching it, they were better. But this was a bit of a pig of a game.
It was
for much of this contest, partly perhaps because of the status quarterfinal, one win away from a semi, two wins away from a final. That pressure, etc., the atmosphere I described to you there. You know, they just need to win. Turkey weren't much of an attacking force, if anything.
Until they went behind,
and until they really had to do something, you know. And we had that shot against the bar, and then the game kind of drifted.
Well, there's a Cerna free kick late on, which Rusu makes a deep. I mean, it's not a brilliant save; it's a decent save.
He's got a lot of hair, and he had the little black NFL
Shivnarine Chandrakul. Yeah.
He didn't have it for that game. Disappointingly, when I watched
the dramatic figure. So
he played a few games for Barcelona. You know, I mean, he was a high profile keeper.
Cost a lot of money.
He did. And 120 international caps he finished with. Yeah. So it's a respectable player. But it is odd because he has the vibe of a kind of perennial sort of third choice goalkeeper, if you like.
He's got a showreel, let's put it that way.
not for all the right reasons, of course. But very charismatic goalkeeper. But the atmosphere, did the atmosphere stay like that for the 120 minutes?
That's why I kind of picked this game when Jonathan Coleman asked me, you know, do you want to do this? Yeah, because... I've seen a lot of football. I remember going to the Belo Horizonte derby, Cruzeiro Atletico Mineiro, 2015, 2016, something like that. That was pretty hot as an atmosphere. You know, it was really something. But didn't touch this thing. And again, the other thing, this isn't a UEFA sanitized environment. You know, with that mile cordon that they put in, you know, you could put
a very neutral stadium.
Yeah, very, very. You could put these World Cup and Euro games on the moon, and essentially it would be the same, you know, atmosphere, the same, you know, walk through the sponsors bit, and then, you know, the Coke, the thing. Can everyone please sit down? No, that didn't work at this game. And, you know, it was very, very different to anything I've seen. Been to covered a few tournaments, fairly significant games. And this was very different, and it really does stand out. It stands out also because I think it almost speaks to something that is largely gone in terms of sort of top tier tournaments that are organised by UEFA or FIFA, etc. And probably games in leagues like the Premier League, for example, because. And I guess there's lots of good reasons for doing this. Are the regulations in terms of safety and all the other modern aspects of being a football supporter? This just felt like something else.
Mm. But also, the Prater Stadion is a great stadium. Yeah, it's a great historic place. The fact it's in the park with the famous Ferris wheel, the Ferris wheel and the third man. You know, when you go to that ground, it feels kind of, it's like what I imagined going to Wembley should have been. Going to Wembley is not like that anymore. Mm. But of sort of a sense of kind of history happened here.
And history can still happen here. It's happening. I'm watching it, you know, and it was very weird because the game was really bad. Meanwhile, as you said, was it like that for the whole game? It was. And again, coming back to modern football, these days with ticket prices and everything else, I suppose the the fans, if they're not, I don't want to say all fans, but you know, fans, if they're not getting a show, they tend to quieten down or complain or whatever.
Do a Mexican wave or wait for the camera so they can wave at it.
No, this was just intense.
But also the two sides you can't underplay, that very sort of nationalistic countries, and you've mapped it out previously, whereas perhaps if it was, you know, two other nations, it might not have stayed like that for the 120 minutes. So, I mean, we might as well fast forward to the last minute of extra time.
Right. Yeah, so, well, 118th minute, I think is officially when it happened. So right. There's a ball down the right. Rustu gets lured from his goal.
Yeah,
he's never going to get there. It's an awful decision. Modric gets there first, and then has the sort of calmness and presence of mind to put in a decent cross. And Klasnić, a substitute, heads it in 1-0.
Not the most convincing of header, but it did the job.
Yeah, I have to say, I had to watch the replay four or five times to work out quite how the ball had gone in. Yeah.
Nerves were jangling.
But it's gone in, there's maybe 90 seconds left. And would it be fair to say Bilic enjoyed it?
That was one of the best things. So he's in this suit, this grey suit. Yeah, he's got his tie on. And it was raining.
Yep.
It was raining that night. It was raining quite hard that night. That tournament, in fact, there was a lot of rain throughout that entire Euro. That's one of my... I remember that. And he ran. He did a Mourinho... that Mourinho did against United, but with even more passion. His players ran to the corner flag to the left, and he's done this dive. He's covered in, gets up. He's in this sort of gaggle of players. He then gets up. I've got another 2 minutes to manage my national team. I'm going to go back to my. But he's sodden. Yeah. This suit is covered in mud and grass or whatever. And then you're going to have to win, right? If that's happened, if you're that wet. And you've just done that. You're going to have to win the game. It's only a minute to go. Nothing's going to go wrong.
They know that it's Germany in the semis. They've already beaten Germany.
Absolutely.
They know they've got Germany's number.
Yep, completely.
We've done it.
It's a bit like when Spurs played Ajax away in the Champions League semi-final the other year. And Pochettino, you know, this outpouring of emotion. And I remember Ajax like having a throw-in deep in Spurs. And I'm thinking, if they score, I don't know what's going to happen to this individual. You know, but of course, we saw it happen to Bilic. They went mad. They were the better side. There was no chance. I mean, you score in the 118th minute, as you say, 90 seconds left. You're within your rights to think job done.
Yeah.
And then, of course...
Yeah, all you got to do is kill the game. Make a substitution.
Yep.
Run the ball in the corner.
Well, and all Turkey...
Kick the ball at the Croatia fans in the crowd. Let them keep it.
Yeah, I was going to say, they'll help you there. But then all that's left of the game is... It's a free kick inside Turkey's half. Rustu takes the free kick.
Obviously, the only thing you can do, whack it forward.
Into the box.
Hope something happens. Šimunić goes for it.
Yeah.
Bang.
Šimunić inadvertently nodded down to Šemi Turk.
And clean boom, strike, you're going to see bang.
A once in a generation strike.
And again, you can imagine the stadium. My goodness me, you had that a minute ago. Those guys have gone nuts, and these guys have gone nuts.
Yeah.
And poor old Bilic's face. And then the game just ends. I think it may have been the last kick of the game.
I think it might have been.
And then.
It was extraordinary watching it at home.
It is the kind of thing a referee would do, right? Of kind of, you let them take the free kick, when the ball's in the air, I'll blow my whistle. Except, he's going towards the box. I suppose I better let them clear it. Okay.
But it was extraordinary to see that emotion, that raw emotion outpouring, and then to be completely wiped away. And then, but the thing is, no one's won the game. You've still got this penalty shootout to come, and you could see that really in that moment Croatia were defeated.
Yeah.
I think Bilic pretty much said that after the game, didn't he? That the ecstasy of scoring the last minute winner to go through in a quarterfinal of a major tournament, and then for that to be cancelled out while you're still buzzing from that emotion. It's not like it was, I don't know, maybe 5 minutes later where you've got time to bite your nails and think, can we hang on? We haven't. It was such a flick of the switch. I don't think I've seen anything like it.
Yeah, and there's no time to mentally reset, to knock a ball about the back and kind of compose yourself, straight into the penalty shootout.
Yeah.
And Modric and Rakitic, probably the technically two best players on the team,
right.
Both don't even hit the target.
Yeah.
And then Petric's penalty saved and it's all over.
Well, interestingly, the goal that Croatia scored had equaled the previous record, first set in 1976, for the latest goal scored in European Championship history.
The shortest lived record in football.
Well, it must
probably,
be.
Right?
Well, it equaled the record, so I suppose.
Right.
Yeah, but yeah, so you're sort of half right there. And then, of course, it was outrightly broken, you know, a minute or however long it was later, which was, you know. And I mean, after the game, I don't know what was going through Bilic's mind.
To be fair, he's... I rewatched an interview with him after. I mean, he's obviously... He's like being hit by a truck.
Yeah,
he's actually talked quite fluently about this.
He's in a state of shock though, probably.
And he kind of sums it up in a way that, you know, it's cliche, but God, this is football.
Yeah,
this can't happen. Poor fellow, it happened to him.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You know, and he said, you know, this proud of the team and all the rest of it. But what can he say? I mean,
yeah,
like literally, that is the most shocking thing that will happen to him in his career, and he's going to have to sort of get on with it.
Yeah, well, rather different to Fatih Terim, who proclaimed after the match, "We have become one of the great footballing nations. Our people can rejoice."
Oh, there you go.
Does
that speak to the man, Terim, would you say, Jonathan?
Yeah, and well, I mean, I would guess as well with Terim that it would, to an extent, have rankled that somebody else had taken Turkey further than he had in a major tournament.
Right.
And now he matched what Guinness had done in 2002.
Yeah.
But did it in much more memorable fashion. Well, I doubt we'll be doing a greatest game on whoever they beat in the quarterfinal. Was it Senegal?
Senegal beat Japan. Yeah, I forget who they played in the second round in 2002, but yeah, I think it was Senegal.
Yeah, so I'd be surprised. We'll have to do this for a few more years.
Maybe we will. But they, of course, they lost to Brazil in the semi-final 1-0 in 2002, but it was a much more entertaining game that they lost to Germany. And as you
say, I wouldn't know. I was watching a blank telly in a bar in Vienna.
Well, but as you say, Tarek, you know, they were 2-1 down. Rustu made an error for that second.
Rare.
Indeed. Yeah, right. Because he was the hero in the penalty shootout.
Yeah, well, these keepers do that, don't they? I mean, it's typical, isn't it? Like,
well, his mistake, you know, in the 118th minute or whatever it was in extra time. And then the penalty shootout, yes, Modric and Rakitic put theirs wide, but he still saves from Petric to seal the win. And then in the next round, they, I think they went 1-0 up against Germany, then they 2-1 down and Klose scored a header and it was his error. But then they equalised with a few minutes left. You think, oh, here we go again. But Philipp Lahm gave them a taste of their own medicine with a 90th minute winner.
They've got it in the locker. But what I wanted to ask you guys about that game and the atmosphere that I talked about, how much do you think that, you know, in today's game, how much does that help having your that crowd? Because we've seen, like, for example, Liverpool... Liverpool, Barca, all these. What is that?
Well, evidently, in that game, cancelled each other.
Right, yeah. Okay, absolutely.
But well, again, just in terms of being prepared to push yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I when people say, it's just one of my real bugbears, when people who say, oh, you've got to give 100% every game. Those people have never given 100% because you can't do it. It's not possible to do it because it's so exhausting and so painful. Especially, you know, if you then end up not winning the thing, most players, if they're giving 85-90%, that's fine. That's a normal thing. But obviously, if you've got a crowd and you're sort of aware of potential to be a hero, if you're aware of how much it matters, it does take away some of those little niggles that might be holding you back. It does sort of focus you. So yeah, I think it must make a difference. And some players will be the opposite; they'll freeze in that kind of environment, but
panic a little. But it makes you wonder why talk about club teams, I suppose. Why the ownership of these teams doesn't do more to create fortress type atmosphere? There's things you can do. Like, you don't need to have, I don't know, £80 tickets, etc. Because
do you want to win the game or do you want to make money?
Well, and there lies the problem.
People who are making that kind of atmosphere aren't popping out for 25 minutes to buy their £8 slice of pizza.
Yeah, but, you know, do you want to be in the Champions League or do you not? All these little things make.
But which is why then, because you're talking about all that, international football could be the arena for this.
Except international football is even more sanitised.
Well, but the home games though, the in international football.
Well, yeah, okay.
But you've got perhaps more of a chance,
because this was in a sanitised. Yeah. Well, they tried to make it as sanitised as possible, but they didn't bargain on the Croatians and Turks, I guess, right?
If my memory serves me correctly, there was a bit of crowd trouble beforehand, I think.
Yeah, and that's where it's hard for me to sort of, completely advocate for this stuff, because as I was saying to you guys beforehand, I don't speak Turkish or Croatian. So I was loving the atmosphere and I thought this is magnificent, but I haven't got a clue what they were saying. So I guess there is a limit to what can and cannot be done in a football stadium. But I would say anything that, you know, within the law and everything else to try and boost your team and to also for viewers at home and everything else. You know, this is the issue Serie A has got with its TV rights, for example. It's struggling to sell high value TV rights because the pictures of their stadiums are of, you know, banks of empty seats and nobody there and some.
Yeah, well, I mean, last year, hang on, do I mean last year? No, I mean the year before last. The River Boca Libertadores final that was ended up being abandoned.
Yeah.
The day before that, I was over there and spoke to Alejandro Dominguez, the head of CONMEBOL, of whom there are many things one could say, but he, in terms of marketing, he's a smart bloke, and he was saying that what we in South America have is we have this great atmosphere, we have this great colour. Our problem is, can we have that without violence?
Yeah.
And 24 hours later, you got the answer.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's very, very difficult.
Indeed. Tarek, it's been a pleasure unpacking that game for us, considering what a drab game it was for about 119 minutes. But, of course, from the vantage point you had, maybe not so because of the fans. But, yeah, really great. Thank you very much
for
coming on.
Most exciting, boring game.
Yeah. I would say so. Well, for more stories like that, do check out theblizzard.co.uk, of course. But, yeah, thanks, Tarek. Thank you, Jonathan, as always. Thank you, everybody. We'll be back next week, of course, with another great game on the Football Ramble Daily. This is the Greatest Games podcast in association with the Blizzard. See you next week.
The moment he'll never forget. And that's it. Turkey go through. And quite incredibly, Rushdu, the 35-year-old goalkeeper, is their hero.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.